Coming to you from the heart of the Diocese of Savannah, this is It's Catholic, Y'all, a series of conversations about faith and life. Views expressed in this podcast do not necessarily represent the views of the Diocese of Savannah.
Well, good morning, everyone. I'm very excited to be here. My name is Betsy DeBrie, and I am a teacher of symptothermal natural family planning for over 20 years.
Good morning. My name is Sarah Schwainer. I've actually been an NFP user for about 9 years now, but just recently became certified to teach FEM, which stands for Fertility Education and Medical Management. So that's what I'm teaching now, and it kind of helps women understand some hormonal issues as well as it's a method for natural family planning.
Hi, I'm Sally Kennedy, and I was trained to teach the Creighton Method over 30 years ago. I recently retired from teaching the method. I call myself a self-appointed consultant now, but if there were ever a need, I would get back in it.
Hello, everyone. I'm Colby. I have been using NFP for about 5 years. I was taught Creighton by Sally, and then she invited me to get certified, so I got certified in Marquette. Well, I'm finishing up that certification process. In a few months, I'll be done with that, and I have 2 kids.
All right, great. Well, I know we're excited to get into NFP and talk about NFP, obviously, which stands for Natural Family Planning. So we've got some topics, I guess, we're going to go through. So let's look at one of the first question, I guess. It says, for people who are unfamiliar with the term natural family planning, or NFP, what is a super simple description of what it is?
It's exactly what it says. It's a natural way to plan your family as opposed to using any chemicals or barriers. It just simply observes a woman's natural occurring signs of fertility and infertility. And it's in keeping with the church's teaching not to separate the love and the life aspect of the sexual union.
I think that's great. I think it's just important that you think about it as a way to either achieve or avoid pregnancy. Mm-hmm. It really can be used for both, which is important throughout family planning. Right.
I guess the only thing maybe I'd add is that it's just a way to collect data that tells when a woman is fertile or infertile within her cycle, and then using that information, the couple can then make a decision about how they want to plan their family. So it's really a data collection method, but it's also gives the opportunity for discernment while practicing marital chastity. How did you become involved in NFP instruction? Sally, why don't you start? You've been doing it the longest.
I got a phone call from Bishop Lessard. He found out that I was a Creighton user. I'd written him a letter saying that we need a family life office here in Savannah, and I didn't want to have any part of it, but I would help get up the energy because that's what I'm good at.
Right.
And he called me on the phone and said, I've been stymied in this regard, trying to find someone to instruct. And within 6 months, he had me sent off to Creighton, and I worked collaboratively with St. Joseph's Hospital. I think St. Joseph and the diocese paid for my tuition, and that was that. You know, it's been such a blessing in our life. I couldn't say no when he asked me to teach because somebody had to do it.
Yeah, that's great. I'll go next because I've been teaching the next longest, I guess. So I was very familiar with NFP just because my mom had used it, and so I was familiar with it. And so I didn't really get trained. We moved to Savannah, and I met Sally, and she kind of gave me like a basic training in NFP, not really symptothermal, not really Creighton, but I wound up doing symptothermal. And that was kind of neat. And then Stella Kitchens, which I don't remember, was she like the director of family life at that time?
She came from Pittsburgh, I think.
Right.
Pittsburgh,
so she came.
Harrisburg Diocese.
Harrisburg, yeah. So Stella Kitchens, who at the time worked at the diocese, came in and did a training session to teach women how to actually teach NFP to couples, because we really had, I think there was Sally, who was teaching NFP at the time. Yeah. So this was in 2002. And so I got trained at that time, and I've been teaching couples ever since. And it's been great. And now, I mean, I'm grateful because I have a very supportive pastor. So we've actually been doing a lot of great just NFP outreach. So having a mission at our church, speaking to some of the like youth groups and high school students about this topic, because as you've probably all know, like by the time people come to you, they're in their 30s and they're like, what is this weird NFP thing you want to tell me about? Right. So we really want to try and reach people earlier so that they can be familiar with it, not a month before they're getting married, which seems to be what tends to happen. I don't know. That's kind of been my experience a little bit. So how about you, Sarah?
Yeah. So like I said, I've been using NFP for about 9 years. I learned it before I got married. I learned Creighton originally in Atlanta, and my husband and I used that for about 2 years. And then after my second child was born, I ended up switching to Marquette. I really liked just kind of having that extra set of data just to make sure we were avoiding when we needed to and that kind of thing. And that was working well for a while. And then I started to experience just some health issues myself and some hormonal imbalances. And I was seeing a wonderful gynecologist, a Catholic doctor in Atlanta, through a practice called Reproductive Health and Medicine. And they recommended that I learn FEM. So I myself learned it and started to use FEM. And I really fell in love with it as from a health standpoint, it helped me to really learn about my body more than I had before, but also from using it for family planning reasons as well. So I learned that personally and then decided to get trained and certified in FEM because I really felt like it empowered me to make better decisions about my health. And then, of course, the family planning aspect was important to us as well.
And as I said before, Sally taught me Creighton when I first got married, and it worked great for those that first year or two when we were trying to get established as a married couple. And then it worked great for getting our first conceived. And then I realized that Creighton did not work for me postpartum. And so that's how my second kid happened so quickly. And so I decided to get switch to Marquette, which worked a lot better for me postpartum. And then Sally suggested that I get certified. And so I'm almost done getting certified in that.
Yay.
That's great.
That's great.
Very exciting. Yes, we need to bring in a new generation, because Sally and I have been doing this for
It's awesome. And even at Orthocane at St. James this past weekend, we had Sarah was there with her husband, and we'll get you there soon enough, you and Colby. I mean, you and Jared. But we had so many young couples part of Pre-Cana as the team, and that was great.
That's great.
Time to get new blood in.
Yeah, sounds good. All right, so here's we love this topic here. It says, the church has always forbidden the use of artificial contraception, which we will get into a bit more as we go. But instead of starting with why something is wrong, let's start with the big picture, the purpose of a human sexual relationship. I'd like to address this a little bit, and I can't take any credit for this. Listening to Father Mike Schmitz has been a great, great way to increase my knowledge and understanding. So I think one of the things I learned from him, every created thing has a purpose. Everything that we see, like this mug has the purpose of being able to hold a liquid so that I can drink it without getting it all over the place. You know, the table has a purpose. Everything has a purpose. And so when you look at things, I think from that point of view, what is the purpose of something? So we need to ask, well, what is the purpose of sexual intimacy? What is the purpose of us being here? Like, we're created for a purpose, you know, to have a relationship with God. And so God created sexual intimacy for a reason. Well, let's find out what that reason is. And so through the church and just through natural reasoning, we can figure out, well, sexual intimacy within marriage has the purpose of two purposes that you have to honor. So you've got the procreative side, you know, being able to have children, and then you have the unitive side, which is having that bonding, growing in love. And so the Catholic Church is actually super consistent on these things, because anytime you distort the purpose of something, you're causing problems. It's going against God's plan. And so when you look at things like artificial contraception, if you've got two purposes with artificial contraception, you are removing one of the main purposes of sexual intimacy, which is procreation, which is life. So as soon as you remove that, you've got a problem. You're misusing sexuality. And that's true with everything. So like in vitro fertilization, why does the church say that isn't right? Like, hey, it'd be great to have more babies. Why isn't it okay? Because you're removing the unitive, the love portion of sexual intimacy. So you don't even have that. You're actually having just life without union or love. So again, you're misusing that purpose. And then, you know, things like masturbation, there's no life or love there. So again, when you look at the church's teaching on sexual ethics, like where they come from, why they say some things are okay and some things aren't, it all goes back to, if it isn't okay, there's a misuse of the purpose. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's probably the biggest thing, like, well, why can't you just use artificial contraception? Mm-hmm. Because you have to look deeper, not just what's convenient, but what actually makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I don't, anyone else have?
Yeah, I mean, we call it love and life or babies and bonding. I mean, just the two go together. And when you distort one or take one out, it doesn't just affect that, it also affects the other. So if you take the life-giving out, it's going to also affect the union. And those are insights from John Paul II that we've gained, and we can see that to our own lives probably. But when you take one out, you're going to also diminish the other aspect. So they go together. And inanimate objects like these glasses and that cup, they can be used for another purpose without destroying their end. But human persons can never be used for anything but love. We're made to be loved and to love and be loved. And that's the only proper way to view the human person.
Let's talk about some of the negatives. Just a warning, this part can be a difficult topic to discuss, maybe triggering to some listeners. Artificial contraception, sorry about that, has many problems associated with it, including physical, moral, relational, and societal. It is something people write whole books about and dedicate their lives to addressing. So we're barely going to be able to scratch the surface here. Let's talk about how artificial contraception, more specifically hormonal contraception, affects the lives of individual women first, and then we'll talk about its effect on our world at large.
I was going to say for this, just with NFP, there's really no health risk. You're learning more about your body. You're gaining insight into your health. And then on the flip side with artificial contraception, it comes along with a lot of health risk. Probably don't have time to go into detail about all of these health risks, but it's basically designed to disrupt a perfectly normal function within our body. So there's going to be health risks in the short term and in the long term. So that's
And those are super well documented.
Yes.
And then if you open up the you know, the pharmaceutical paperwork that comes with it, you know, all the things that
from low libido to stroke and death. Mm-hmm. I mean, it covers the gamut. But I do want to say, too, we're talking about contraception here in this conversation when it's used to avoid a pregnancy. Some people are prescribed hormonal contraception for medical purposes. And just to be clear, the church doesn't have a moral issue with that. However, the risk and the health risk are still there, and you have to make sure they outweigh. That's one aspect. And the other thing is there are doctors who will help you find alternative ways to treat whatever pathology you have without resorting to hormonal contraceptive, because if you use hormonal contraceptives and you're engaging in intercourse, you're married and you're engaging in intercourse, the very, very sad reality, and it says it right inside the packet of pills, and all hormonal contraceptives work this way, that the backup method of these hormonal contraceptives is abortifacient. They thin the lining wall of the uterus, so just in case an egg is released and there's enough cervical mucus to facilitate the sperm transport, the third mechanism of all hormonal contraceptives is they disrupt the lining wall of the uterus so that then if that new little life makes its way down the fallopian tube and tries to implant, there's not a hospitable place for it. So, and I remember finding that out early on, and I remember thinking, because like many people, you know, when I got married, there was no, I mean, I hate to say it, but 40 years ago this June, about this time 40 years ago, we went to an engagement counter weekend. And I asked, what about the pill? Because I was thinking about going on it, because that's what you did 40 years ago. And now they put you on it when you're 13, 14, and 15, God bless these young girls. But no one at that engagement counter could answer that question. They didn't give us any information, despite the fact that there was a very flourishing program in South Carolina. So I was on the pill for the first 2 months of our married life. And then saw a brochure in the back of the church at Fort Jackson about natural feminine planning. And I said, oh, I think this is what I've been looking for. And, so I saw that. But I remember finding out that the pill could be abortifacient and just having to grapple with that. And so I think it's important people understand that. And that's very triggering, I'm sure. But it is reality. So if, and I'm getting off on a tangent here, but if a doctor has prescribed hormonal contraceptive for some pathology and you're engaged in intercourse, you need to understand that, and maybe you'll find an alternative treatment to it, because there are doctors who will help you do that. Like Sarah's doctor in Atlanta.
They're wonderful, yes.
Wonderful. And you can go to them from Savannah. You can have
consults. Yes, I still see them virtually. Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, and isn't it true that because of that aspect of a hormonal contraceptive, does the church then teach that you should abstain if you're using it for a medical purpose?
Right. Well, you know, that's really getting into
kind
the
of
weeds
tricky.
Here.
Okay.
It's getting into the weeds here. But I would say talk to a priest about that.
Right, yeah. Right.
Talk to a spiritual director.
I'd also like to add one emotional impact on women with hormonal contraception, at least speaking personally. I've never used hormonal contraception, but I think as we age as young women, you can start having a dissociation with your own femininity mm-hmm. by how masculine-based culture is in a certain sense, because I started hating my body because, oh, these periods are so terrible and this and that. But then as I learned NFP and started understanding the four different stages of my cycle and what's happening with my hormones and what I'm more capable of at this time of my cycle, maybe I'm a little bit more socially capable in the follicular stage, right? And then maybe I'm a little bit more withdrawn and I do more introspective stuff when I'm on my period because the two hemispheres of my brain are communicating more readily. So when I started seeing it more in that way, it made me appreciate my dynamic femininity and made it so that I didn't want to suppress femininity. I wanted to embrace it and mm-hmm. capitalize on it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something
so powerful. I always tell people
very true.
That learning and practicing NFP was the most empowering thing I've ever done as a woman.
Right.
It's just, it just so respects the feminine nature of women, which is a beautiful thing.
Fertility is not the enemy.
Right.
Right.
I mean, all of society has made fertility an enemy until you suddenly decide you want to have a child and now you have to move heaven and earth and then do all these crazy, crazy things right. to now have a child. And it really, the physical aspects are terrible, like the side effects that women mm-hmm. suffer. The moral aspects, I mean, you have to think about it, like, what is this doing to your soul? Because mm-hmm. this is a serious, you know, problem that you're having. If you're aware of what the moral effects mm-hmm. of birth control are, if you're using it to avoid pregnancy, there are some serious ramifications for that. So that's going to affect mm-hmm. you spiritually. And then I think they're really, you know, talk about, well, how does it hurt women? And then, like, what is its effect on the world at large? You know, what happens with artificial birth control is all of a sudden all this is put on the woman. And she, a woman, now becomes just an object of pleasure. She loses her human dignity because she has sterilized herself to become an object of pleasure for for a man. And so you're like, well, how is that empowering? I don't understand that. So you have that spiritual malaise that is going to come with that. The fact that, oh, I'm not worthy, like there's something wrong with me inherently because I'm a woman who can be fertile. Mm-hmm. I mean, what does that do to the psyche of women?
Anyone, you know, is really interested in this topic, and I hope everybody is, go to Humanae Vitae. Very short encyclical by Pope Paul VI. Some encyclicals are easier to read than others.
This is
super easy to read. And Pope Paul VI lays out the societal ills that will come, the personal and societal ills that will come if there's widespread contraceptive use. This was in 1968 when the pill was just coming on the scene. And all of his predictions have come true. Mm-hmm. And men who already are tempted to use women will more readily use women. Governments will begin to use contraception as a form of coercing population control.
Yes.
I mean, more.
And the United States is one of the worst.
Right.
Like, we're not gonna give you this money that you need so desperately unless you also
to third world countries
right. unless you accept our ideology right. on not just contraception but all sorts of strange
sexual things. We're really going
things.
Into the whole thing here, but Humanae Vitae is so powerful and it makes an appeal to couples, to men of science, to pastors. It makes an appeal to everyone to really understand this issue and promote it in your field. Wherever you are, because right. it's really, if we can get the love and life right in a married couple, as John Paul II says, as the family goes, so goes the world. Mm-hmm. And we have to get this right.
Yeah, I guess, you know, worldwide from another perspective, what you're saying, how we're forcing this thing on people that don't want it. And then there's also some of the ramifications people don't realize too. There's so much hormonal, I don't even know what you would call it, but hormones in our systems.
What about the fish that are now androgynous because they have so many hormones?
And so the levels of estrogen and other hormones in our water that people are ingesting on a daily basis, and male fertility has declined a huge amount. I mean, I think it's declined something like 70% in the last 40 or 50 years. Wow. And so when they look at, you know, rates of male fertility now versus 50 years ago, and you're like, okay, well, the hormones that women ingest, that comes out through their urine. That all eventually doesn't get completely filtered out of our water system. And so you have to ask, well, how much of a role is that playing in the reduction in male fertility and even female fertility? You know, because we're taking all these chemicals in. So there's that to think about. You know, and I think the biggest thing is, you know, it really helps promote a culture of death. Because what happens is people rely on artificial contraception and then it doesn't work. And then they go get an abortion because they're already either in an illicit relationship or they don't want people to find out. So it just promotes this culture of death everywhere. So if you eliminate the issues with artificial hormonal contraception, you really also start to eliminate a vast number of the abortions that are being perpetrated.
And obviously, and you know this, not every
couple is going to resort to abortion.
No, of course not.
If you look at the philosopher Judith Jarvis Thompson, she makes that argument. And I won't get into the weeds, but you can look her up. She talks about using contraception as like putting up burglar bars on your window. And if that fetus still finds its way in, you did everything you could, so now you're no longer responsible. That's a philosophical argument that's been made for, you know, 40 years by this woman, Judith Jarvis Thompson, and many others picked up. But we trust that most people of goodwill would not resort to abortion, but certainly, again, John Paul II and Maritas of Splendor said abortion and contraception are fruits of the same tree.
Same tree. Well, and even not maybe specific abortion, but just the abortifacient potential.
Right.
I mean, IUDs, that's their primary mechanism, but a lot of times when women go, they're not told that. They're just told that, oh, an IUD will keep the sperm from reaching the egg.
Right.
And that's actually, yes, that's part of it, but that's not the main way an IUD works. It actually is abortifacient first.
And
it disrupts the line of the uterus so that a newly conceived child cannot implant. And so they don't like to tell women this. And that's another reason where you can tell, like, hey, maybe artificial contraception is something you want to question, because it is, they lie about the effects. They lie about what could happen to women. And you have to ask the question, well, are they really having our best interests at heart with this quote unquote medication? I think it really has helped to destroy the relationship between men and women. Like really pitting men and women against each other, you know, and putting everything on the woman for having the responsibility for fertility and childbirth, you know, well, it's your fault. You weren't on the pill. Things of that nature.
You missed.
So it puts the separation between the two, and you look how divided people are these days, and it's just one more division that I think would be completely unnecessary.
And that's a good way
to talk about the positives of natural family planning.
It's absolutely,
it has to be a couple's effort, as we all know. You know, the husband and wife together, the wife obviously observes her signs, but the husband and wife together understand what's going on, and then make decisions about their intimate life based on where they are in their marriage, what some serious reasons may be to avoid a pregnancy, and, well, maybe they're not so serious after all. Maybe we won't avoid a pregnancy. They're communicating all the time, as you know. If you can communicate about, you know, your cervical mucus, about your hormones, about where you are in your cycle, obviously you can communicate about a lot of other
You can
things.
Talk yeah. about anything, yeah. right? Yeah.
We all agree that
And it helps establish your needs on a day-to-day basis, because if your husband is in touch with where you're at in your cycle and what that might mean hormonally for you and how he can support you in different ways, because we're dynamic creatures.
Right.
It's not just the same thing every day. So it educates them as well.
What would you two young couple, I love it that we have these young what would y'all say about some people you know, say that the abstinence is not natural in a marriage, and it's not good for a marriage to have periodic abstinence, which is how NFP works. If for a reason that you've discerned together as a couple, you have a just reason to avoid a pregnancy at this time, you simply abstain during the fertile time, as opposed to putting a barrier, you know, tell the Lord and giver of life, you're not welcome here right now. I'm going to put this barrier up. Instead, you say to the Lord and giver of life, the Holy Spirit, we feel like at this point it would not be responsible of us, would not be prudent of us. So we're simply going to abstain during this time. We're not disinviting you. We want you to be with us every act of lovemaking. We're going to abstain. So what would you say about that abstinence? And how does that, obviously it can be hard, how does it benefit your marriage? Or does it benefit your marriage, I should say, the periodic abstinence?
Yeah, I was going to say, first of all, I definitely agree with you. It can be hard. I mean, that period of time can be difficult, and sometimes think, oh, it's not fair. Like, you know, there's these other methods that we could be doing, but we know that by doing this, we are obedient to the church. We know that there will be blessings in our marriage because of this. And I think ultimately, I think it improves our communication with each other, like you mentioned before, and just making sure that we're praying about this together, discerning this every month, and communicating about when the right time to have another child is, or to delay.
And also to add on to that, just the ability to connect, it encourages you to connect in other ways mm-hmm. when you do have to abstain. And I completely agree, it is hard. It won't ever stop being hard. I pray that it won't ever stop being hard, because right. that's a good sign as a right. couple. Yeah. If it gets yeah. really, really easy to abstain, then maybe you gotta right. kindle the fire a little bit. So I see it as something I'm grateful for, that it's hard. And I also, yeah, the whole encouraging to connect in other ways. Sometimes we try to schedule something else that's really fun and out of the house for us to do, to connect,
so that it can just fireplace right. on the just, sofa. Right?
Yeah, exactly. So right. that's another benefit.
Right. Yeah. Right. And then people talk about that second honeymoon, and I think, I mean, maybe you see that like mm-hmm. a built-in honeymoon every cycle,
right?
Because
yeah.
you have abstained when you're trying to avoid a pregnancy. You have abstained, and then you have this natural time that you can come back together again, and it makes it all the more. What do we say? Abstinence makes a heart grow fonder.
Yeah,
I think that's true anyway.
And I will say one thing that can kind of the other side of that coin is that sometimes when you do get to your periods where you don't have to abstain, I also want to emphasize that in a marriage, you know, you don't have to put that pressure on each other. Some people talk about, I don't know if you've heard this from your friends, but feeling pressured that, oh, well, now that we can, we have to.
Mm-hmm.
No, you don't have to. You can still keep it natural and spontaneous right. and all that. Right. There's plenty of ways that you can keep it spontaneous within that time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're working on your relationship, it's, yeah, you're it's not going to mess you up in those terms, I guess.
I think one of the great things about it is that it helps both partners build sacrificial love for each other,
mm-hmm.
which is the key, because marriage is a vocation, right? So, you know, God created us. He called us to a vocation, and our vocation is supposed to bring us closer to God. So your husband's supposed to make you holier. He's supposed to make you holier. You're supposed to make him holier. So how does that happen? Only through the growth of sacrificial love. And so if you know your husband is willing to wait, or you're willing to wait over this time, then that's saying, I love you enough to wait. I care enough about you. I care enough about us. And that growth of sacrificial love is actually bringing us closer to the Lord, like mm-hmm. developing our relationship with God, which is the purpose of our vocation. Mm-hmm. And so that people don't understand the abstinence part, like they just think all negative, and it really isn't. Because if we don't have almost forced opportunities of sacrificial love, I'm not running out there to try and develop sacrificial love right. for, you know what I mean? Like
it's just this, like Lent.
Right.
It's like Lent. Every Catholic yes. can embrace the idea that Lent, yes, it's kind of a drag when you first approach it, but then everyone realizes there's so much benefit.
There's so
to
many
it.
Wonderful
great
benefits.
Great analogy. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. So it's definitely not something to avoid. I mean, the other thing I would add to that is apparently sexuality is the only thing that we're supposed to have access to 24/7 with no restrictions.
Right.
Because that's not true for real life. If you have to have a medical procedure, you're going to have to, you know, abstain for a certain amount of time. Or if you're an athlete, like there are certain things you can and cannot do. Mm-hmm. And you go, you know what? I have to wait because I need to be able to do this. Mm-hmm. And so that's true in every part of our lives. And then the other thing, like my husband wasn't military, but he did travel with his work. You know, I never worried about him trying to go find somebody else because he was gone for 2 weeks and we couldn't have sex for two weeks, you know? I would trust him. He trusted me. And if you're military and deployed for 6 months, you're expecting your husband to not go find someone for the 6 months they're gone.
Yes, that the whole term with marital chastity is just foreign to our culture.
Right.
But chastity really is an apprenticeship. The catechism says an apprenticeship is self-mastery, which, you know, and I always say you can't give what you don't possess. And if you don't have self-mastery, and this is what Lent helps me do with my Diet Cokes and all my other things that I have, my little addictions.
Yeah.
But if we don't have self-mastery in our of our sexual passions, how can we truly give ourselves as a sincere gift to the other? So that it's the same thing, the sacrificial love. I love the word self-mastery, which is a word I learned from studying the catechism. So again, go to the catechism under chastity and under the sacrament of marriage. So the sixth commandment would be a good place to start in the catechism. And learning about chastity and then what marital love is, you know, what the church, the great call the church has for us. It's just so much in there.
Well, and so much of it is also just being obedient to the church, even if you don't always understand it, just having that faith and trust that God has put this in place for a reason. Right. And that there must, whatever that reason is, even if we don't quite, understand it completely, that we should have that trust and faith to do it.
When Brian and I walked into Providence Hospital in Columbia, South Carolina, to learn NFP from Bob Nurbin, there were so many couples in South Carolina wanting to learn NFP. Father McCaffrey was there preaching it up. He was a military priest at the time and preaching it up in Columbia, but all over South Carolina, that was just there's just great fire for NFP. So there's so many couples that Ann Nurbin, who was the main teacher originally in Columbia. Her husband, Bob, who's a physicist, a retired physicist at USC, had to go off and get trained. But Brian, I walked into Providence Hospital. There's a quote on the wall that said, "Seek not to understand that you may believe, but believe that you may understand." And that's been my mantra for NFP. We went in there blind. We were 22 years old. I think I was 23. Brian was almost 23. But I just knew that the pill wasn't the answer. And my mother had tried to tell me, but, you know, she wasn't quite able to talk about those kind of things as well as we can now. But I knew that wasn't the answer. But I didn't understand what NFP would be in our married life.
Yeah. We wanted to talk a little bit about myths, which we did kind of cover. I mean, any final
I have a myth
comments?
I'd like to address.
I have one too. Go ahead.
Yeah,
go for it. This is one of my favorites is people, especially on the side, the question says, myth busting, what are some common misconceptions about it from both ends of the spectrum, from those who are pro contraceptives and those who are opposed to any form of natural planning, even NFP. And what I'd like to say to that end is I come from a mom who had 5 kids in 6.5 years. A lot of people try to say that, oh, if you breastfeed, then you'll be able to naturally space and you don't need to use NFP, you don't need to use anything. Right. And they might have had an experience where they could space 3 or 4 years with breastfeeding. But I am here to say that did not work for my mom. She breastfed all of us entirely. And it can be really easy to, especially young people, that's why I'm glad we're doing this podcast for young people that aren't married yet, because it's very easy to sit there as a not married person without kids to say, well, they clearly just didn't breastfeed or they didn't do this right or something like that, and to still condemn NFP. But it is, especially if you have those types of genetics, I realized I had those types of genetics very quickly because I was even using NFP and I still had Irish twins. And I think it's just really important to educate people on that because I think it's just a big misconception and it's just really important to support each other in that way because NFP is already so hard to learn and it can be very overwhelming. So when you're afraid of your peers, your fellow Catholic peers, possibly judging you for that, that just makes the whole experience a lot harder.
Right.
And we never have the right to judge another person's child spacing choices.
Right.
We never know their situation. So that's a big myth that I like to bust. I'm just like, breastfeeding does not equal child spacing.
Yeah. It can, but obviously not
some,
always.
But
so yeah, but people you can't just be like, oh yeah, that's going to happen for me.
Right. And so, it's getting exponentially less common because of probably the hormonal stuff and the water. And I think a lot of other issues that our generation is facing, it's becoming less and less common that people can space that way.
I mean, it did for me, but yeah, it's different for everybody, so you don't know. But so you just need to be, in other words, you can try and do that, but you still need to be aware of your fertility with using NFP, like being trained. And it's not hard to learn NFP, but it does take some training.
You know, and it can be overwhelming at first, especially if someone's coming from a non-religious background and they're so.
Yeah, but you can approach that from, hey, from the health standpoint. I mean, I've taught plenty of couples that are a non-religious background that they're like, oh, yeah, we're all about, we don't want to take the hormones and stuff. Yeah, so, well, and that's why we recommend that people get trained like 6 to 9 months before their actual wedding date so they have time to do
say,
that.
Say along the lines of, you know, spacing the pregnancies, I think a common myth is that NFP requires us to have as many children as possible, and that's just not true. I think those large families that you see are absolutely beautiful, but there's beauty in small families as well. And there's a lot of really valid reasons that people may want to delay pregnancies or space their pregnancies. And that's really between, you know, a couple and God, and, you know, praying about it, seeking spiritual direction, talking to a priest, things like that. But that, along those same lines, not to judge a family that is very small. They may have plenty of valid reasons or infertility reasons, things like that, that you just don't
secondary
know.
Secondary infertility.
That's what I was going to say. You know, we look at big families, we think, oh, they're the good Catholics. Not necessarily. There are beautiful families all around, and we have no idea what was going on in people's marriages. But
one thing that really helped me when I was grappling with it, because I have a lot of friends that have a lot of kids, and it's easy to compare, like, oh, I don't have another kid yet, is that just like a healthy body looks different for everyone, like my body at a healthy weight looks different from someone else's, a healthy size family is looks different for everyone.
I've loved just talking with, you know, all of you about this. I think my closing statement would just be, I love NFP because it allows us to be open to life and open to love. And it's just, it's a beautiful thing.
My closing statement would be, one of the questions we have, what if someone's overwhelmed and they don't know which method to use? Because I don't really have, since I'm retired now and I do know about all three different methods, that's what I like to do, is help steer people in the direction where they, what the method that, that, you know, I can be a consultant. So if anyone needs to know about the different methods and what's the difference between them, you can call each one of us or you can call me and I can tell you a little bit about each one of you and such, because it's, each method is going to work for, you know, a woman might, you know, each woman is unique. And the methods are suited for her unique needs at that time.
And financial needs as well.
Financial needs as well.
Lots of options. Just educated. There's so much great information out there. Anything you want to say, Sarah? Are you good?
No, this has been a wonderful conversation. I'm glad to be here.
We're glad y'all are here, too. We're super glad y'all are here.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you so much.
This has been an episode of It's Catholic, Y'all. Visit us at diosav.org. or on our Diocese social media platforms for more.